Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani on IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I have a great show planned for all of you today. I missed you all last week, but I was dealing with some personal things, so I'm really so happy to be back. And my guest is going to be Michael Vitti. He is the president of the Long Island Mountain Bicyclist and also Long Island Greenways and Healthy Trails. And those are both nonprofit advocacy organizations that help to create recreational trails away from traffic right around the New York metro area. So I'm really excited to have him on. And, you know, I always focus on eating green, but it's so important for us always also to get out into the green. And so this is a really nice way to explore that. So he'll be coming on in a little bit, but first I want to talk to you about some things going on in and around the news. I want to share with you a little bit about Al Gore's new film, which I just saw the other night, which was really great. It was, you know, I can't say that there was really all this new information that I didn't know about, but since his last movie, which was 10 years ago, he was able to document how much worse our planet has gotten, which I think is no surprise to all of us. But the really nice part that that I want to share with you is that he's been doing these trainings, the Climate Reality Leadership Program, and he's trained over 12,000 people to be leaders in climate change. And, you know, after graduating, you have the tools to go out and help mobilize your local community to write papers, sign petitions, meet your representatives, and to really, you know, move our communities towards renewable energy sources and away from fossil fuels. So it is really great in that way. And there's actually a training coming up that I have shared on my website if you're interested. It's going to be taking place in Pittsburgh from October 17th to the 19th. And it's supported by the Heinz Foundation. So I don't know if it's free. I would assume that there's some cost to it. I really don't know what it is. But check it out. I have a link on my website to find out more information about it. Or you can just go to his film, his website, and you can find it as well. It's called An Inconvenient Sequel, Truth to Power. But anyway, definitely a film worth seeing. A lot of information. If you haven't seen the first one, it's, you know, really full of information for you, so worth checking out. I have lots of petitions on my website that I would like to encourage you all to participate in. There is one for demanding clean air. There's another one to protest the pipelines and resist big oil altogether, and another one for fracking, another one for GMOs, another one to protect bees from pesticides. And so all of those are really important. And one thing that really was clear from Al Gore's film was that it's up to all of us, those of us that really care about our planet and care about future generations, to get off of our seats and really mobilize and become active members of society and really protest these atrocities that are trying to be jammed down our throats. You know, we have an EPA which is supposed to protect the environment, and yet the EPA is being run by someone who thinks the EPA shouldn't exist. So it's really a problem, as you can imagine. So we need to be louder than they are, and we need to really work together to make change happen. Another thing that, you know, I wanted to talk about was wheat gluten and all the heirloom varieties that are out there and the difference between buying organic wheat as opposed to non-organic wheat. And I've mentioned this before. Back last September, when I was at Terra Madre in Italy, I was part of a panel, not part of a panel, I was observing a panel, and we were discussing about farming and how it's changed. And one gentleman talked about how most wheat, the largest producer of wheat, especially semolina wheat, was coming out of Sicily, and that most wheat was grown south of Rome, that the climate north of Rome really was not suitable for growing wheat. And fast forward 20 years, and the largest producer of wheat now is Canada. And everybody's scratching their heads trying to figure out, how is that possible? Their climate is not conducive to growing wheat. You need a longer growing season so that the wheat has time to dry, so it's not going to mold and all that. Well, it turns out the way they do it is they chop the wheat down and they spray it with Roundup. And that quickens the drying process and makes it able to dry and be packaged and not mold. So the question is, are people really reacting to wheat with all these wheat allergies and gluten sensitivities, or are they really reacting to Roundup? We know Roundup is unhealthy and has so many different allergies attributed to it, as well as so many other health issues. So, you know, that's just food for thought. And, you know, I actually wrote about some papers that were found from a lawsuit way back in 1978 with the EPA and Monsanto and Dow Chemical Company about what they were spraying on the fields. And there's been a lot of times where the Environmental Protection Agency is not forthcoming and straightforward, and they are colluding with big corporations. And since Citizens United, you know, it's gotten even worse, because corporations are now looked at as the most powerful people, because they give so much to the all the candidacies in the elections. So we need to reverse Citizens United, of course, but in the meantime, we all need to do what we can. So please keep up the good work. Please sign these petitions. Do what you can. Find something you're passionate about and really become active in it. We really need everybody's participation. Lots of things going on around the city I want to share with you. I've been talking about this for a couple months already, and it's finally here. August 11th, which is tomorrow, is the Food Truck Derby in Bridgehampton. That's hosted by Edible East End, and it's a, you know, a three-hour event from 4 to 7 in the afternoon. There's still tickets available, so if you go to Edible East End's website, you can purchase the tickets there. But it's at the Hayground School in Bridgehampton, and it's a lot of fun. They have, you know, over 50 food trucks and lots of good food, good beer, good wine. So check that out. On Saturday, August 12th, there's a compost welcome tour, and that's at the Queen's Botanical Gardens. And I think I mentioned that before, that composting is not as simple as it seems. I mean, I've been doing composting for years, and I can't say I'm very good at it, because when I put my compost down, even though my plants do really well, I have so many baby tomato plants and baby squash plants that are growing because my compost is not getting hot enough to kill the seeds. So I wish I could go. Unfortunately, I can't, but I really need a compost 101 class for myself. So if you're composting and you would like some more information, that's going to be taking place at the Queen's Botanical Gardens on Saturday, and I recommend people going to that. The American Herbalist Guild is having an herbal medicinal walk with Ellen Kamai. Ellen Kamai is a host on this radio show as well on the Progressive Radio Network. She's incredible, and I recommend everybody going to that. That's at the Oyster Bay Library at 6:30 on August 17th. Slow Food East End is having a community potluck on August 17th. You can go to their website to find out more information about that. And our Slow Food chapter is having a pasta cooking class with one of our members who is also a chef, a professional chef. Her name's Antonella Rivera, and she is from Italy. She grew up there. Pasta making was a daily activity in her family, and she wants to share her passion for making pasta with all of you. So that's next Friday night. I know there's still tickets available, so you can go to the Slow Food North Shore website for a link to that, and I also have it linked on my website. So check out that if you are interested. There's a seed-saving workshop coming up on August 26th. That's being sponsored by Turtle Tree Biodynamic Seeds. And their seeds are wonderful. Those are the where I get the majority of my seeds. And that's up in Copaic. So it's, you know, upstate a bit. But if you have the time, that's August 26th. On September 4th is the annual Shinnecock Labor Day powwow. Slow Food in general has been doing a lot of communicating with different indigenous tribes and trying to bring them into the Slow Food family. And so I'm really excited to check out the powwow this year. And if you can make it. It's out at their reservation in Southampton. Also, Slow Food North Shore is having a family event. We are showing the film What's on Your Plate on September 9th. And following the film, we will be doing a family sushi rolling workshop right in the cafe at the Cinema Arts Center. So there's tickets on sale for that through the Cinema Arts Center website, and that's in Huntington, so check that out. We've done that workshop once before, and it was a big success, and so we're bringing it back because people have been demanding it. So come out for that on September 9th. And the following day, there's a fall potluck at Restoration Farm in Old Bethpage. It's our local organic farm. We love going to their events, so if you'd like, check that out, restorationfarm.org. And there's other events, but I don't want to take the time to go over them all, so go onto my website and check out all of those. I want to share with you my recipe before I invite Michael Vitti on. My recipe this week is a Thai cucumber salad. I felt like it was important to share recipes for the next couple of weeks that are using up all the bounty coming out of the garden, because we all have, if you're growing cucumbers, chances are you have more than you can eat easily. So making some cucumber salad for every event really works. And I wanted to just change it up a little bit, have a little bit of spice to it. So this is a Thai cucumber salad. I started with 4 cucumbers and a teaspoon of salt, and I just put that, mix that in a bowl and put it over a strainer and let some of the water drain out of the cucumbers. And you can actually rinse them after that and then dry them out on a paper towel or, you know, on a dish towel, and then put them back into the bowl. And in a small saucepan, I dissolved 1/2 cup of sugar in 1/2 cup of rice vinegar. And I mixed that up with the juice from 1 lime and about 1/4 cup of chopped cilantro. And I mixed that up and put it on top of the cucumbers along with 1/2 cup of a red onion, and mix that up and let it marinate for at least 2 hours. It can marinate overnight, and that's really great. I used red onion. If my peppers had been ready at the time, I probably would have put some thinly sliced red peppers in there as well. And then before serving it, I garnished with 1/2 cup of peanuts. I did roasted peanuts, but unsalted peanuts, but you can use whichever you like. And another squeeze of some lime juice and some more fresh cilantro, and mixed that up and served it. As you can tell, it comes together really quickly. It just needs time to marinate. But it's really delicious and feeds a lot of people. So check that out and let me know how you like it. And now I would like to share with all of you my guest, Michael Vitti. He's the founder and president of Concerned Long Island Mountain Bicyclist, and also Long Island Greenways and Healthy Trails. And both of them, as I said before, are nonprofit advocacy organizations that help to create recreational trails away from traffic and the concrete jungle. CLIMB, which stands for the Concerned Long Island Mountain Bicyclist, that's hard to say, they are responsible for maintaining over 175 miles of mountain bike trails across Long Island without a mountain bike mountain in sight. Michael's also a delegate of the New York State Trails Council, and that helps to create statewide policies on recreational trails. And they're also an affiliate for Trips for Kids, which is a nonprofit organization that helps kids from the inner city get out on mountain bikes, where they can learn how to get over obstacles in the trail, and hopefully down the road they can use those skills to overcome obstacles that might be in their life. So it's my pleasure to introduce Michael to all of you now. Michael, are you with me?
Yes. Honey, how are you doing?
Good. Welcome. So glad to have you here. Can you first tell me, how did you get in mountain biking?
Well, I used to ride my bike exclusively instead of a car because, you know, I wanted to be greener for the environment. And I used to ride my bike 18 miles to work each way. But, you know, as people started texting and had cell phones, distracted driving. I got hit by cars a couple of times, and then cars annoyed me, so I found out about mountain biking in on Long Island, and even though there are no mountains, this is just riding trails in the woods away from cars, and it felt much better.
And so now do you drive a car, too?
Yeah, you have to drive a car on Long Island.
I know. It's unfortunate. I talk about that. You know, sometimes we think of the city life as being so unhealthy, and yet in the city, every time you leave your apartment, you're walking. And you walk, and you walk, and you walk. And where we live, I leave my property reluctantly, and I'm in a car because there's nowhere to walk to. I walk, you know, at my street goes right onto the service road of the Long Island Expressway. So, you know, there's really nowhere that I want to walk to. And even biking. If I want to go biking, I know that I put my bike on the back of my car and go to a bike trail. And it's probably a bike trail that you've helped, that you're partly responsible for.
Yes.
So thank you for that. So are people open to building trails on Long Island? How does that work? I would think with, you know, all the financial, you know, challenges here on Long Island that you have a lot of resistance to that.
Well, it's very important to be part of an advocacy group so that you can push the politicians to get these bike paths through. Many times, federal grants are available to build the bike trails. So, you know, that's something that the politicians should strive to get, because that's not funds that are being used locally. We're using federal funds, and we're creating jobs building the trails. And we're also, after the trails are done, it's good for the economy because people are buying bikes, they're getting bikes fixed, and they're getting out and exercising, and their health is improving, and health costs go down.
Mm-hmm.
It's a win-win.
Yeah, so many of these things are, but so often the politicians are so, you know, tunnel vision. They don't have the ability to step back and see the bigger picture. And, you know, I think some people might be wondering why I'm having someone on my show that, you know, is doing mountain biking. You know, every once in a while I go out of my norm of having a food person or an environmentalist to bring something else in. I had some, you know, a meditation person a few weeks ago, and, you know, and a midwife, you know, talking about midwifery, because healthy lifestyle is beyond just eating. You know, there's all the different aspects. Just like when I talk about the food system, there's so many dots that people don't connect, and we have to connect the dots. And healthy lifestyle includes exercise and being out there. So can you talk a little bit about, you know, healthy lifestyle and how mountain biking is part of that?
Well, everybody's different, and we realize that. So everybody should be exercising. That's part of a healthy lifestyle. So we created a separate group that advocates for paved paths, which basically is good for any beginner. They're usually very non-hilly, and it's a wide paved path that and it brings you somewhere, to a park or to a shopping area. But we also, you know, realize that some people like to be more thrilled than that, and we created mountain bike trails in the woods, which are kind of like, since there's no mountains around, they're kind of like cross-country trails that just wind your way through the woods, and they're pretty tight, and they keep you on your toes. So basically that keeps you focused on the trail, and you have to stop thinking about everything else, so it becomes a meditation. And if you stop thinking about the trail and concentrating on the trail, think about something else like your bills or whatever, then you're going to smash into a tree. So it becomes a meditation, and it's sort of like a religion for some people. They just, you know, they love to do it so much over and over again.
And how long are the trails usually? Like when you start one, is it a 15-minute thing or is it a two-hour thing?
Well, we have each park that we build a trail on, we try to keep them different from the other trails. And they run from a minimum of 5.5 miles loop to our maximum is 22 miles. So and the terrain varies, so you can choose if you only have 15 minutes of time to go mountain biking, you can choose the 15-minute trail version, or if you want an all-day epic, you can connect various trails together and, you know, ride for 4 or 5 hours.
Mm-hmm. Are there maps of these trails? Like, how would people find out where they are?
Yeah, all the maps are on our website, climbonline.org. You can download the maps and print them out. But now, in the paperless world, there's apps for your phone. So we use this app called Trail Forks, and you can download the area's maps, and it shows you where you are on the map as a blue dot, even without cell service. So when I'm traveling to Colorado, Utah, and other areas without cell service in the real mountains, I know I can look at this app, and it'll show me as a blue dot on the map, and I know exactly where I am.
That's amazing. How does it work when you don't have cell service? I don't understand these things.
It's the same thing as Google Maps for your car when you don't have cell service in your car, and it uses the satellites.
Uh-huh.
So it's a GPS function.
Wow, amazing, amazing. And so it's good for the whole country.
Yeah, the world.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. So how does the word sustainable relate to mountain biking?
Well, we started using the word sustainable years ago in the 90s before it became a buzzword. So we designed, many people blamed mountain bikers for erosion that was causing on the trails, but we found out that the main person that causes the most erosion on the trail is the person who designed the trail in the first place. So we came up with this system, a sustainable trail design system that designs the trail so that it resists the forces of erosion, water, and it resists the forces of use. So we design little grade reversals in the trail so the trail doesn't go down for quite a... If a trail goes downhill, water goes down the hill. So after 50 to 75 yards, we want to put in a grade reversal because if water runs down the trail too far, it starts picking up materials and erodes the trail. The other part of a sustainable trail design system is you want to create a quality experience for the users so that they become endeared to the trail. They love the trail and they want to help fix the trail because we're a volunteer organization and we rely on people to donate money or muscle to help us maintain the trails. So if they love the trail, they're going to want to come to the annual maintenance days and help us fix the trails up. You know, a lot of times we have to fix vandalism to our signs. We have to replace signs. So there's quite a bit of work that goes into the trails, and cutting back the invasive plants along the side of the trails is another opportunity that we have for people to volunteer.
So when you build trails in Nassau County or Suffolk County, it doesn't cost the county money, really. They're not the ones that have to maintain the trails, because I could imagine them saying, oh, we don't have the budget or the staffing to maintain trails, but they're not responsible for that, huh?
Exactly. And the first trail we built was in 1990, which is when Climb was established. And we made it a no-brainer for the municipality that owned the land. We said, look, we want to put in trails. We'll use existing trails mostly, and we'll only build new sections of trails to make a consistent loop. And we'll build the trail. We'll maintain the trail. We'll pay for the signage for the trails. We'll pay for the kiosk. There's nothing you need to do. And if the municipality wanted to build a mountain bike trail, they don't understand the psychology of the user group enough, like we do, to build a quality experience. So we're building trails that give you a feeling of being in an amusement park. It's like it's green infrastructure. It's very low impact. And we're creating something that doesn't cost the taxpayers any money.
It's getting me excited. I want to go try it. I've never done that. You know, I mean, I've certainly biked in the woods, but usually, like, I've gone out to Bethpage State Park, and it's a paved trail, and it's definitely nice. I mean, it's beautiful, and it's a nice ride. You know, I've gone to, you know, SUNY Old Westbury's near me, and I've ridden around the campus. But to actually be on a small dirt path in the woods just sounds like it would be so nice to feel like you can get away, especially in an area like Long Island where we're so crowded. There's so little open space and an opportunity to feel like you're in nature. And, you know, there's this whole nature deprivation that, you know, that is actually becoming a syndrome that people are suffering from. And this seems like a way that people can really get out into nature without having to travel too far. You don't have to go upstate New York. It's right here, and we don't even know about it. Now, it's interesting because you're talking about that you learned how to build sustainable trails. There's actually a school for that. I know you said you studied sustainable trail building in the Smoky Mountains. Can you tell us about where you trained and how that works?
Yes, the International Mountain Biking Association, which is our parent organization, had these classes in the Smoky Mountains, the Rocky Mountains. I've been to British Columbia and taken classes. Every 2 years they have a conference, and they give classes on sustainable trails design and also how to be a better advocacy group, because a lot of times people don't want this in their backyard. You know, we have a lot of NIMBYism to overcome. So every 2 years I went to classes in these beautiful places in the mountains and learned sustainable trails design. And, you know, I've been thinking about it a long time, and I've come to realize that maybe, you know, we trail designers – in the future, they're gonna find out in the history books that trail designers were like shaman, and they designed these trails which were like meditative chapels in the woods. And there might be a new religion that we're starting called the Church of the Open Sky. And we're creating meditative experiences for you in the woods. And we like to keep the trails narrow. So it brings you closer to nature and makes you pay attention to the trail so that your other thoughts go away.
So it's not like biking on the paved path where I'll bike with someone right next to me and we're having a conversation as we're biking. This is not that. This is really a one-on-one experience,
yes.
Correct?
Single file. You'll be traveling single file if you want. Sometimes you can't talk because you know, you're climbing up a hill for a half a mile, and you can't talk because you need to provide oxygen for your muscles. Mm-hmm. So you have to breathe instead of talking.
Uh-huh. And single file.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. That's fascinating, you know. I didn't even know it existed until I was having that conversation with you. So this is really a whole new world. How is Climb different from other bike clubs?
Other bike clubs just concentrate on their rides. So we have group rides, and we also advocate for new trails, and we maintain our trails, and a road cycling club, they don't have to maintain the roads, they don't have to build the roads. They have they can ride anywhere they want. So we try to create trails so that you don't have to drive so far to ride your bike. So we try to create trails throughout Long Island, And we had this Vision 2020 where we wanted 20 miles of trails within a 20-minute drive of anywhere on Long Island by the year 2020. And to reduce the amount of driving you had to do to go ride your bike.
Uh-huh. So great. Let's take a couple-minute break. And when we come back, I want to talk about some of the legal issues that you have to face and hurdles that you have to go over to build some of these trails and some of the other organizations that you work with that are really exciting. Everyone, don't go anywhere. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. Be right back.
PRN, 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 Progressive Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Hello, this is Cordelia Gaffar. I'm the founder of Workout Around My Day and the stressless mom of six. I have started the new Replenish Me radio show to help moms to have strategies to get through their day and to renew themselves throughout the day with little small self-care tips. And I'll be having interviews with self-love coaches, wellness coaches, just to help you. So join me Thursdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and replenish you.
This is PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green, and my guest today is Michael Vitti. He is the founder and president of Concerned Long Island Mountain Bicyclist and also Long Island Greenways and Healthy Trails. And we're just talking about building trails throughout Nassau County and Suffolk County and also New York City. Now, I know when I was talking to him early, he was telling me that it was illegal to do mountain biking in New York City. And, Michael, can you tell us how long it took you to fight that one?
So since 1992, it was illegal to mountain bike in any New York City park. And so I wanted to find out why, because I wanted to have people in the city mountain biking. They had certainly had a lot of large parks that were good enough to have mountain bike trails. So I found out that it was illegal because they said mountain bikers destroy the environment. And the reason they thought that was because people, mountain bikers, there was such a demand for mountain biking that people would build their own trails, and they would put them in places that were not the best areas. So they were in sensitive habitats. They didn't understand how to identify plants, so they were ripping out native plants to make their own trails. So it took me about 6 years of going to meetings every couple of months with each department of New York City Parks to convince them that they should allow us to go in and build our own trails, because if we built trails that were exciting, then mountain bikers wouldn't go off the trail to make their own exciting trail, like they like to make trail jumps, and we incorporate those into our trails because some people like to, you know, jump in the air with their mountain bikes, and so we were creating experiences for all levels of mountain bikes. They didn't believe us. They thought we were scam artists, but eventually we prevailed. And the first time after the trails opened, one of the people who were most opposed to mountain bikers said to me, you know, before I met you guys, the only way I thought to control mountain biking was to increase fines and confiscations. But now, after I see what you guys have done, and you built the trails to avoid the native areas, and you created this beautiful facility, I'm thinking, where else could we put mountain bike trails? Because, you know, you guys did exactly what you said.
Where was the first one?
First one was in Highbridge Park.
Where's that?
Washington Heights. That area had a lot of negative activity. The most popular activities in that park were smoking crack, shooting up heroin, and prostitution. So we went in there and we brought in a positive recreational activity. And when you bring in a positive recreational activity like mountain biking, then people who are doing the negative activity don't want to be seen by people who are in there on the trails, because they have cell phones and they can call the police. And so the negative activity gradually diminished. So, you know, now the people in that community have a great place to mountain bike. There's a pump track there for kids, and there's dirt jumps for BMXers, and there's a certain amount of cross-country trails. The park wasn't really that big enough to put a lot of cross-country trails, but in Cunningham Park, Queens, we were able to put, that park was bigger, and we were able to put in 7 miles of trails, and now that's going to be expanded to 10 miles of trails.
Wow. Wow. So how many mountain bike trails are there actually in the city of New York?
There's 3 miles of trails in Highbridge Park. There's 7 miles of trails in Cunningham Park, and there's about 5 or 6 miles of trails in Wolf's Pond in Staten Island.
Uh-huh. Not to stereotype or anything, but in areas where there's a lot of crime, whatever, and there's a lot of poverty, how do people afford to get a mountain bike? Do you guys rent mountain bikes, or is there a place that people can, you know, do you help people in need access mountain bikes?
Well, we have an affiliate called Trips for Kids, and Trips for Kids has a storage facility with 40 bikes. So we give people the opportunity to try the bikes for free and, you know, have this opportunity. And we also have a lot of free events, like this Saturday we have, you can try a bike for free on the trail, and we teach you, it's called Dirt 101.
This Saturday?
This Saturday at Cunningham Park on 210th and 73rd Avenue. And you can try a bike for free on the trails. We have we offer guided rides, and we're also going to be teaching skills, mountain biking skills. And the first skill you need to learn is how to fall. So we have pads set up, and we teach you how to stop, drop, and roll.
Really?
Yeah.
Like in a fire?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It's interesting. You don't think that you really have to learn how to fall, but I would guess you do.
Well, yeah, because you're going to be falling. You know, mountain biking is not for everybody. It's an inherently risky activity, so you're going to be falling. And even though I've been mountain biking since mountain biking was invented in the early 80s, I still fall. I fall a lot because I'm challenging myself, and, you know, I'm trying to have a good time, and sometimes you fall.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And are they usually bad falls? People get hurt a lot?
No, mostly scrapes, you know, and they hurt their egos mostly, but, but there is, you know, the most common injury is, broken collarbone, but, you know, we're teaching people skills on how to avoid those major injuries.
And do you advocate people wear helmets and proper equipment?
Oh yeah. Yeah. You're definitely going to want to wear a helmet because, we designed the trails to be exciting, so there's jumps on the side of the trail, and if you want to do a jump, you can do a jump. If you don't want to do a jump, you don't have to do a jump, but there's roots and rocks, and it's twisty and turny, and the trees are right there. So, And there's certain areas that are fast, and, you know, I've seen people without helmets they smash into a tree and they have to get 6 stitches in the side of their head. So helmet is cheap insurance.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit more about Chips for Kids? How do you, you said you're an affiliate with them. Can you tell us about the organization? Do they do other kinds of trips? Is mountain biking just one part of it? And then they, you know, they have other stuff that they do with the kids?
Yeah. So Trips for Kids is a group that started in Marin County by San Francisco. And now there's chapters all across the country. And we have a New York City chapter, which is run by Andre Sanders. And she has two containers, storage containers at Cunningham Park, and they have 40 bikes there, and they take kids from the inner city, and they teach them how to go through the trails and get over the obstacles, and if they don't know how to ride a bike, they teach them how to ride a bike, and then after the ride, they have a cookie circle where the kids talk about things that they were afraid of that they accomplished. And last year, I think they took out 800 kids for the year. So,
wow, that's great.
Yeah, so we're really making an impact.
So you have the two organizations, Climb we've been talking about, which is the Concerned Long Island Mountain Bicyclist. What is LIGHT, which is the Long Island Greenways and Healthy Trails? What's the difference? And tell us a little bit about LIGHT.
So we created LIGHT, Long Island. You know, it's always good to have a good acronym. We also have this other group called LIFE, which is Long Island Fat Bike Enthusiasts.
Oh.
That's for fat bike riders on the beach, but that's another story. So a LIGHT, we created Long Island Greenways and Healthy Trails, and also for advocating for paved paths, because I was going, as a bicyclist, you know, I like to have people ride their bikes away from traffic on paved paths, which I think is safer and gets more people riding bikes. More people riding bikes means less cars on the road and less pollution. So I was going to these meetings with the politicians, and I was saying, you know, I'm from the mountain bike club, and everybody was asking, you know, why the mountain bikers pushing for a paved path? Don't you guys like the rough trails in the woods? And I'm like, yeah. So we created this organization to advocate for paved paths. So the projects that we helped on Long Island is we got the Ocean Parkway bike path extended so you can actually ride your bike all the way to the beach. You had to stop a mile from the beach previously, and then we had the trail extended to Tobey Beach, which is 4.5 miles from Jones Beach, and we're advocating to get that extended all the way to Captree Beach, which is going to be a phenomenal oceanfront bicycle path. So it's for recreation and for getting to the beach without using your car. We're also advocating with Nassau County to get the old motor parkway path, old motor parkway route turned into a bike path that's going to connect the Queens line with the Suffolk County line. It's going to connect Alley Pond Park in Queens with Eisenhower Park in East Meadow, Bethpage State Park in Bethpage, and go all the way to the old Bethpage Village restoration in old Bethpage.
Wow. So going Ocean Parkway, for instance, that bike path, is there a parking lot at the beginning so that you can, like, bring your bike to the spot where you can then get on and take your bike the rest of the way?
Yes.
Where's that?
Cedar Creek Park. It's a Nassau County park in Seaford. And you can park there. There's lots of parking. You can also park, if you want, you can park at Field, any of the Jones Beach fields, the theater parking lot, Jones Beach Theater parking lot, Field 6. Field 6 has a nice bike facility there. And now you know, you had to stop a mile from the beach at the north end of the theater parking lot. It took me about 4 or 5 years to get the state to allow us to actually get to the beach. Now you can ride all the way to the beach, and you're allowed to ride on the boardwalk, whereas previously you were only allowed to ride the boardwalk off-season. Now you can ride all season.
Really? So they make a separate path on the boardwalk for bikes?
In the center. Yeah, the center part, just like in Long Beach, at the Long Beach Boardwalk. And we're also advocating for the, at the end of the boardwalk on the west side, we want them to create a paved path that goes to the nature center in the west end part of Jones Beach, which is a very little used section of Jones Beach. Hardly anybody goes to the nature center or knows that it exists.
I didn't know it exists. What is it?
It's a really cool place. They have whale bones there. They teach the kids about marine biology.
So it's like a little indoor museum?
Yes, indoor and outdoor. Uh-huh. The whale bones are outdoors. They're not real whale bones, but they're a simulation. And there's a circular boardwalk for bird watching over there. So very little people know about it, and we told them, look, hey, it's a perfect destination for families. They can all ride their bikes safely to the beach and go to the nature center, and you know, it'll be a nice day out.
I'm excited to hear about all this because, you know, one thing I do with my kids annually for Mother's Day, you know, since it's Mother's Day, I get to pick, and so we've been doing bike rides because normally what when your kids grow up, what do you do with them? You can take them shopping, you take them out to eat, you know. There's not that many really good, wholesome activities that your kids are willing to do with you. And so, you know, skiing is one of them. That's one of the reasons I took up skiing, you know, because it was something I could do physical with my kids that they were happy to do. So anyway, we would put the bikes on the back, and we actually rode bikes out to Fire Island. But, yeah, there was a lot of the way that we had to walk the bike because we couldn't ride all the way. And so to hear about these places that I can, you know, take my whole family, we can do some bike riding. It's really exciting.
Yeah, so Life, Long Island Fat Bike Enthusiasts, we have a lot of group rides that goes to Fire Island, and the fat bikes have like 4.8-inch tires. They're really, really fat. And sand is no problem. So that route to Fire Island that's very sandy is no problem anymore on a fat bike, and they actually rent them at the concession stand at Robert Moses Beach now.
Really? The fat bikes, so you can rent them?
Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. So we're getting towards the end of the show. I'd love to have you share with people listening how they can get involved, both, you know, to access your trails again and to help volunteer. I know you said you have certain maintenance days if people want to help out.
Yeah, well, we try to hit all the social media avenues for contacting people. So you can go to our website, climbonline.org, and we have lots of information there. We also have a section where you can figure out how to get to the trails using a train if you don't have a car. So we have a Facebook page, Climb Online. We have an Instagram page, Climb Online 1990, and we have a monthly e-news that we send out, so you can sign up on our website. And
you have a Fat Tire Festival coming up. What is that?
Yeah, okay, so that's at Cathedral Pines, and that's September 30th. You can camp out at Cathedral Pines. There's campgrounds there, and there's a 10-mile mountain bike trail system there. So we have barbecue, and it's a free event. You have to be a Climb member because of insurance reasons.
Is that expensive to become a Climb member?
No, it's on a two years is $50, 1 year is $30.
Uh-huh.
But you also get a 10% discount at the local bike shops with your Climb card, and you get free food at most of our events. Mm-hmm. And free skills classes. So this Fat Tire Fest, we're going to have vendors there. We're going to have bikes you can try out for free, brand new bikes you can try out for free. And we're going to have group rides. We're going to have skills classes. We're going to have a kids ride. We have usually have a kids race. We usually have a little tricycle race for adults. That's pretty funny. And barbecue, and then you can camp out at the site. There's 10 miles of trails on site at Cathedral Pines. But
where is that, Cathedral Pines?
Exit 66 on the Long Island Expressway in Middle Island.
Uh-huh.
And if you want to ride other trails within a 15-20 minute drive of anywhere of Cathedral Pines is 34 miles of other mountain bike trails you can try. So it's really the hub of mountain biking out there.
Uh-huh. And you also have videos on your website that people can click on and watch.
Yeah, Hofstra University created some videos for local nonprofits, and they created two videos about climb, and we have some other videos that might be helpful for people to learn about the organization. And, you know, it also shows volunteers helping maintain the trails. We also offer certain trail sections up for adoption. So if you live nearby and it's your favorite trail, you can help us maintain it. Just contact us through our email at climbonline.org.
Uh-huh. And do you also have a, you know, once or twice a year where people can donate bikes? I know, you know, locally, we have Bikes for Africa, you know, and there's a big collection at our local school, and they send bikes to Africa. But I'm thinking, you know, for some of the, you know, in-need communities that could benefit from, you know, someone's old mountain bike, do you have a place that people can donate bikes?
Well, we usually send them to Africa.
You do, too?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, we brought a whole bunch of bikes to that donation center. But if anybody has an idea like that and they want... We're a volunteer organization, so if anybody has an idea like that and they want to run with it, we'll help you bring it to fruition and use all our channels of communication to help you support get your project.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I know. You need someone who wants to run with it, right?
Exactly, because
right.
If it's your idea, it's your project, but we'll help you get it done.
Uh-huh. Right. Well, you know, as the chapter leader for my local slow food chapter, you know, people come to me with ideas, but they just want to give me the idea and have me run with it. I'm like, no,
exactly.
I can't. You want, you know, if you have an idea, great, run with it, and we'll help support you. But
exactly.
You need that energy. I mean, you know, we're all volunteers. And
well, yeah, I call those people spark plugs. We have lots of spark plugs, and we're running on 12 cylinders because we have 12 spark plugs. And those spark plugs, those people who have the ideas for the event or whatever, they're very important because I can't do everything and I'm a very good delegator. So I like to just, you know, direct everybody on how the best way to do it and put our resources behind them.
Uh-huh. So is there anything that I have not asked you that you feel like you'd like to share with my listening audience?
I would tell everybody to just give it a try. Go out and see how you like it. It's not for everybody. It's it is an inherently risky activity, but it's very enjoyable. We have 1,000 members. We have over 2,000 people on our Facebook page. So it's a fringe sport. It's not mainstream, but... you know, it's also good for at-risk people who were at risk, you know, and it's great family event because, you know, you could take your kids and get them hooked on something
that's
like
good for them.
Adrenaline rather than heroin or the other.
Well, I hope there's other choices in between biking
yeah.
and heroin.
No, but, well, at Washington Heights, heroin was the preferred activity. Yes,
right. I think I probably know the answer to this, but can people walk the trails? You know, if people just appreciate being out in nature, can they walk the trails, or do mountain bikes bikers come through and get pissed off that people are on the trail.
No, we mark the trail as a mountain bike trail so that you know you're going to encounter mountain bikers. So if you want to walk the trail, that's fine. If you want to run the trail, that's fine. And many people like running and walking on our trails because our trails are very well maintained. So we keep the brush back so that you reduce the amount of ticks you might come across.
Oh, thank you. That's appreciated by everyone, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Well, Michael, thank you so much for joining us. It's been great to have you on. And it's, like I said at the beginning of the show, for everybody, it's so important that, you know, when you are eating healthy, that you also are weaving into your daily activities time to be outdoors and in green and in nature. We all need some of that space, especially living in a very heavily populated area like Long Island. To get some green space is really hard, and New York City even more so. So thank you, Michael, so much for the work that you're doing on behalf of everybody listening. And everyone listening, thank you so much for joining me. You've been listening to Bhavani at I Eat Green, and I'll see you all again next week. Bye for now.